previously on Podcast Without Pretense.
I as a shopping for meat thermometers. That's hot.
So the thing is, I didn't want to get one with the dial, but Eric says if I spend more than $8 or something, I'm doing it wrong, and I just think that's crazy.
I mean, if the dial on your meat thermometer is too small, you've got other problems.
Oh, good times.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Ayaz Akhtar.
And I'm Eric Sandine.
And together we have better pre-show conversations than we have shows.
Well, meat thermometers versus yoga hosers. I think meat thermometers are way more interesting.
Did you actually get a chance to watch it, Ayaz? You were the one holdout.
I crammed in yoga hosers. So
that's probably the best way to do it.
Yeah. So, but I know that Eric has 4 pages of notes. So
and I only have three. Single spaced, but I've got 3.
You've got 3 single spaced. Mine's like a single spaced ish in my stream of conscious way.
But your font is size 6, which is a real problem. So, who wants to explain how this thing works? At least this episode, because this is the structure we'll follow. Oh, I think. Ooh. Oh, you there? Yes, you there? with a long beard.
All right. So about 100 episodes ago or so, a little bit more than that now, I guess, we decided that we would try and test our attention spans by watching terrible movies and devoting as much of our attention toward those terrible movies as possible. They don't have to be terrible. They just tend to be. And at the point where we just can't take any more, we write down how long we lasted. And then from that point forward, we can invite distractions into the experience. But initially, there could be no distractions, no alerts, no phone calls, no conversations with other people, no alcohol. And once we write down that number, it's fair game. We can either have as many distractions as possible, or we can even walk away from the movie if we so choose. We take turns choosing what the film will be. Last time it was Eric's turn, and he chose the Kevin Smith magnificent octopus known as Yoga Hosers.
That's true.
By the way, thing I did not know about Yoga Hosers before we started watching it, that it was the second in a trilogy of films, the third of which has not yet been made, the True North series from Kevin Smith. The first one is called Tusk, which I had heard of and has popped up on my Netflix list a few times, but I've never actually watched it.
Well, after watching this, I have no interest in Tusk.
Yeah, Tusk. It's funny Tusk because you mentioned like, Tusk last week, last week, I think, and I just put two and two together that there were references to that in this movie. Like I did not understand the references.
Oh yeah, there's a ton of references. Stuff that if you, and this will become clear as we go through our synopsis of this movie, stuff that if you were not familiar with the film Tusk, those entire conversations make little to no sense to you. And there's one that takes place in a school library that largely focuses on the events from Tusk. And obviously having not seen it, it didn't have any resonance with me. That was like an entirely wasted scene. But that's okay, because this movie is a series of wasted scenes, as it turns out.
Yeah. Okay, so how long did you go, Jonathan, before you went to a second screen or decided to go into anaphylactic shock by having some beer?
Approximately 20 minutes.
Eric?
Wow. 11 minutes and 34 seconds.
Okay, so technically my time was zero. Because I was having dinner, and then I was having a beer with it. Then I put the movie on, and I'm like, oh, shit. That technically counts as a distraction. But if we don't count that with my Racer 5, which was awesome, it was approximately 16 minutes and 9 seconds.
I think if this show has a drinking game, every time Aya says technically it was zero, you would have like a guaranteed drink like every third episode.
Well, no, I think it's actually happened about a handful, maybe 5 times or so.
Yeah. All right. That's fair. It seems more frequent to me.
Wait, no, I'm wrong. Cause I keep forgetting. Cause technically I get like pop-ups or I'll see, some like Mac OS stuff will pop up cause I'm taking notes on my laptop. So you might be right. That might be a secret drinking game that I was not aware that could get you really fucked up. Well, you only have Unless you're chugging
only if you're, an episode. Yeah, only if you're binge watching episodes of podcasts without pretense, yeah. Which I cannot imagine any sane human being would ever do.
That's what I we mean, should set up.
Assuming that most of them are at least a half hour, it's going to take you a while to get wasted. So you'd have to be binging and listening at like 3x speed.
And maybe we'll drinking more Goldschlager. Rules.
Yeah. More rules will be added to the PWP drinking game. Podcast with drinking game coming soon.
Yeah. So before we dive into the synopsis, are either of you Kevin Smith fans? Like, are either you fans of his work apart from this film?
I am. I like his podcasts. Yeah. I liked Clerks. I didn't mind Clerks 2. I liked that. What was that? I think he did Red State. That I thought was pretty out there for Kevin Smith. I liked his episodes of The Flash and Supergirl. So
I have not, you know what? I haven't watched enough of his stuff to fairly comment on my opinion of his work. Of his work, I have seen a few things. I've seen Mallrats. I've seen Red State.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen
Dogma.
I've seen Dogma. I saw Dogma in the theater and was not impressed. I saw Chasing Amy, which I thought was quite good. Out of all the ones I've seen, Chasing Amy was the one that I felt really was the best crafted film from a story perspective. I thought Dogma had some interesting stuff in it, but I felt that it wasn't – it felt to me like he was walking a middle ground between trying to really skewer things like organized religion with satire – and still trying to kind of play it safe because it didn't go as far as I thought it needed to in order to be a real satire. Although I thought that Matt Damon in that movie was quite good. But yeah, I've never seen Clerks, or at least not all the way through. I've never seen Clerks 2. I've seen bits and pieces of Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. So I was not a Kevin Smith fan going into this, and definitely coming out of it, it has not changed my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say I'm 50-50 on it. I like some of the movies, but I always hated the podcast. But yeah. So I don't know. I'm neutral, I guess. This movie though, it may have tilted the scales. Just a little bit.
Yeah, there are some issues with this movie, and it goes beyond the fact that it is the second in a planned trilogy. I don't know if the third one's ever going to get made because this movie got panned pretty badly by various critics, and I don't think it did particularly well. So I don't know if the third one, which, by the way, is I think going to be called or was supposed to be called Moose Jaw. It was supposed to be like a moose version of Jaws. That's not a joke. That really is what the third one's supposed to be.
It's not funny either way.
Yeah. I mean, it's, well, let me put it this way. It's not my joke. That is what it's supposed to be. yeah. So Tusk, by the way, sounds like it was genuinely unsettling and disturbing with a lot of body horror in it. So that was also very different from a lot of the other stuff Kevin Smith has done. So I haven't seen it. I might try and watch it. I think it might be interesting to see sort of a Cronenberg-esque body horror movie from Kevin Smith. But my hopes are not high considering the second entry into this trilogy.
So shall we start with the summaries?
Who wants sure. To, Eric, do you want to go Eric? Or do you want me to go?
I can go. Mine will probably go pretty fast and you can interject as we
go. Okay, cool. Yeah, I'll follow along.
Yeah, so basically my notes start about 11 minutes and 34 seconds in, and I like backfilled a tiny bit. So the movie opens with Hava Nagila for some reason. 11 minutes and 30. Okay. First note, what the fuck? Is yoga funny? I mean, dissatisfied customers are funny. So we get to a point, the opening, they're like practicing with, they're in a band that's horrible. They sing a song that's horrible. There's a drummer. That's about it for the opening scene. Eventually, customers walk in and they mention the Tusk thing a few times. They mention the walrus, that the girls save the walrus, right?
Yeah.
And my note is they saved some man dressed up as a walrus or something. So that's like the beginning of the Tusk references that make no sense throughout the movie unless you actually know that this is a sequel to something or in that universe. All right. Okay, we have two girls. They're both named Colleen, I think. They work at a quick stop. Real shocker there. They want to go to a senior party. Everyone in this fucking movie says about and a ton, and it's pretty horrible. Yeah, so they're basically saying a boot and yeah.
Right. So in my notes, just to add to what you've said, one of the first things I write is, before I jump into the plot, I should explain this film takes place in Canada, which explains why 98% of the jokes in the first half are all about how hilarious the Canadian accent is. And by hilarious, I mean like air quote hilarious. So seriously, if you had to take a drink every time someone overpronounced a boot for about, you'd die before 25 minutes were up. And so the other 2% of humor comes from dumb dialogue character cards. Whenever a new character is introduced in the first half, and by the way, this is abandoned about halfway through the movie,
yeah.
I guess because you don't meet anybody new. But whenever you meet anyone new, there is a 8-bit style character card of that person accompanied by the 8-bit version of O Canada played in the background with a couple of little facts about whatever the character is. This is never more than mildly amusing. Both the female protagonists are named Colleen, which might be a joke. I don't know. And the store they work in is called the A to Z. Spelled E-H, like in A, and then the number, the numeral 2, and then Z. So A to Z. Their band only consists of a drummer. So I guess all the other music is on a pre-recorded track because they don't play any musical instruments.
Yeah, so I've got a couple of notes on that too. So the band is called Glamthrax. There's two singers and one drummer. Lots of guitar, but I don't see any guitar player. Oh, Adam Brody's the drummer. Second Adam Brody movie in a row after Welcome to the Jungle. Sorry about that, guys. Right. His name is Ichabod. I don't think he shows up again for the rest of the movie. Then there's the story A to Z.
He's in a flashback because his flashback, he doesn't have tattoos all over himself. And he says, you guys would respect me more if I had tattoos all over myself or something like that. Thus being the joke that in the beginning of the movie, he's got tattoos all over himself and they still don't respect him. Ha ha ha.
When the girls show up and they're talking to the customers, I have here in my notes, they put on really heavy fake Canadian accents. Parentheses, is it fake? Sorry, boot that. That's also what the captions say. Literally spells a boot. A-B-O-O-T. I guess everyone is Canadian. Maybe this movie's in Canada. And there are too many puns in this movie. That's what my notes are on that.
Maybe this film's in Canada. Boy, Ayaz lives in a world filled with mystery compared to the two of us, Eric.
Well, listen, the accent was so over the top. I'm like, maybe that's a thing the girls do. Like, oh, okay, when they are being sarcastic, they're Canadian. You know, like when you were in college, that every drunk girl would have a fake English accent? Or was that just my college?
I didn't know anyone who had a fake English accent. I knew people who would occasionally affect one for a very specific purpose, but not as a general means of communication.
Washington University, class of 2001. Lots of girls get drunk and they sound... Well, when they get drunk, they decide to put on English accents. This is based on my life experience.
Is it like received pronunciation, or do they go full on Dick Van Dyke Cockney?
No, they try to do the classic style.
Pronunciation. Got it. Right. I just think it'd be funny. Ooh, oi, I like this beer.
No. But that would have made a really big impression on me for the rest of my life. But yeah, that'd be something. Okay.
All right. Where did we leave off, Eric?
Where am I? Oh, yeah, they're in the back practicing. Nothing really happens there. See a small guy with a helmet behind the shelves move around. Whatever. All right, moving on.
The little guy with the helmet turns out to be a Nazi sausage monster. They factor in much more prominently later on in the film.
So store's closed because they're practicing in the back. They walk out to the front, let the people in that are waiting outside, hearkening back to Clerks, and there's tons of that in this movie, so just wait. Let's see, you're caught up. All right. Colleen 1, a.k.a. Colleen M, mom doesn't want her to go, some menstrual cycle joke. Colleen 2, a.k.a. Colleen C, parents don't care about things. Buster.
The thing you're referring to, by the way, is a senior has invited senior these girls who are sophomores to a party. And so one Colleen's mother says no, because senior boys only want one thing. And the other Colleen's father is like, well, good for you getting invited to a senior party when you're still a sophomore. That's amazing. And it's played by the guy who was what's his face? Buster. Yeah. Buster in Arrested Development.
His name is Tony Hale.
Tony Hale. There we go. Colleen 2. I don't really remember which one's which. Her mom is from Orange is the New Black. I don't remember her name anyway either, but she's a comedian and she's pretty funny generally, not in this film. The parents have a sex scene so they can make a joke about hockey or something. Colleen 2 plays the keyboard. Colleen 1 is singing. Whose parents are whose? I think I have it reversed.
Wait a minute.
They sing a song. Wait. I skipped the guy dying, right? All right.
Wait.
Yes. Oh, yeah, also a guy dies.
My note also has a guy skip that. Because he just says something like, oh, get out of my bum. I think he says a couple times and then he dies. Right.
So he's one of the customers that was locked out of the store. Yeah. We kind of like cut to him walking home later on with some toilet paper, and we see small Nazi helmet thing behind him. He falls to the ground and says something to the effect of, oh, get out of my bum, something like that.
Back to this before the sex scene, there's some euphemisms about riding the Ferris wheel and jumping the bouncy house as sexual acts, and that actually got a snicker out of me because I'm like, I've never heard that before. That's really It's a little out there, and it's also.
I can't imagine why you haven't heard it before.
Natasha Lyonne, I think, is the she's playing the love interest. Her delivery is usually quite good, and she did very well. And Tony Hale playing opposite, I did think that scene. While the rest of the movie's actually this whole movie's pretty dumb, that I thought was like at least mildly amusing.
They are also they're two comedic performers who have a very good sense of timing and had fun chemistry. So I would agree with you that those scenes that they were in were highlights for the film.
So eventually they sing a song. It's not great. The dad sang it to her as a child. Oh, great. They're both singing now. And the wall is vibrating from the amps. So, the parents go off into their bedroom to have some, like, I don't know, not even really a sex scene. They just, like, start talking. The girls start singing a song in their room, and the walls are vibrating. I didn't really understand it. But the dad starts crying because it's a song he sang to her as a child. My other note is, oh shit, I think I know this song, but then I couldn't actually place it and didn't feel like looking it up. Did anybody get the song they were singing?
I didn't write it in my notes, but I did recognize the song. I just don't, it's been a couple of weeks since I've seen it now and I don't remember what it was.
It's by Styx. I don't remember the name of the thing because it was in the captions. I'm like, okay, that's Styx.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. So eventually during the song, we have a montage. They're singing over top of it. It's just a bunch of scenes of them being friends.
Great. Yeah. We should also mention that these girls, and this is something else I have in my pre-plot notes, because I wrote a whole bunch of just general thoughts down before I started really taking notes of what was happening in the film, because I had watched 20 minutes and didn't take notes. Then I went back. But I said they wear perpetual smirks on their faces no matter what's going on, essentially giving you the implication that both young ladies believe themselves to be superior to pretty much any other human they come into contact with, despite the fact that they're both pretty stupid. One is more stupid than the other, but they're constantly wearing these perpetual smirks, but it doesn't make them like charming roguish types or anything. It just makes them kind of irritating. So they are very much not sympathetic characters, at least in my opinion. Maybe it's because I'm old.
They're not. So eventually we get to their high school. It's called Terry Fox Prep. Probably a joke I don't get about Canada is the name of the school. They hate they hate school yoga. So they go to gym and they're doing yoga, and they have school yoga. They hate it. The teacher takes their phones. The teacher's Canadian accent is worse than mine, and I don't even do one, I don't think. Colleen passes nice. Out. Okay, we're yeah. in a class yeah. now. World War II. Perhaps this is history class. The teacher is Miss Maurice. She tells them there were Nazis in Winnipeg waiting for Hitler to show up and conquer. In the 30s, Great Depression, this caused some people to turn to Nazism. Toronto swastika... they're sending Nazis to Hudson Bay. Oh, Canadian Fuhrer, a joke about Canadian Idol. Flashback. Great. There we go. Haley Joel Osment is the Canadian Nazi. Cartoon about getting rid of Jews with Canadian Nazis is beavers. Right. Okay. So, yeah, basically the history teaches... I told you, there's stream of conscious notes, so it all just slowly comes back as I read.
It sounds right to me. That's exactly what I saw. Yeah. Go ahead.
I could give you a slightly more narrative version of what you're saying, but I'm going to wait till you're done with the segment.
So the Nazi's name was Andronicus Arcane, I think. Yeah. They tormented a bunch of people, blew up storefronts. So basically they have this like flashback of these Canadian Nazis, I think in Toronto, just basically doing when Nazi rose to power in Nazi Germany, doing the same thing, burning down storefronts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Sorry, the cat got in my way. I missed some joke by the principal, which sounded racist or something. yeah, that was in there. Yeah, that's basically where we are. If you want to go more into the Nazi invasions in Canada.
I mean, I'll just clear it up a little bit. So I have it in history class. We learned that the Nazi Party had a presence in Canada with a French-Canadian anti-Semite named Adrian Arcand. That's the one played by Haley Joel Osment, who wanted to round up all the Jews in Canada and put them in boats in the Hudson Bay, then fire upon them with cannons. But a German named Andronicus Arcane overheard the French-Canadian, and together they formed the National Unity Party of Canada. Arcane, as it turns out, wasn't caught and disappeared after World War II, so it's awfully convenient that his creations are popping up now. Convenient and dumb. So yeah, Andronicus Arcane turns out to be kind of the mad scientist character who was experimenting on people, so sort of the Mengele, really, of Canada. And as it turns out, the little monster we got a glimpse of earlier in the film is one of his creations. We learn much more about those later on in the movie. And then we get back into the point where the principal returns the girls' phones to them in the principal's office. So that brings you back up to where you are, Eric.
Yeah, pretty much. They talk to the principal. It's not funny. She makes some joke. I didn't really catch it unless either of you did. Yep. Okay, now there's some weird French guy. Ah, Guy Leprent. I don't think that was actually it, but whatever.
It's Guy Lepoint.
There we go.
Spelled is he like the librarian?
No. Yeah. He's a writer. He wrote about the manatee. The manatee. This is the scene Jonathan was talking about that makes roughly no sense if you haven't seen Tusk. He's inquiring about the guy who got killed. Guy was cut into 100 pieces. Oh, they were in the library to charge their phones. I get it. Because I was confused why they were in the library, first off.
Yeah, I actually have in my notes where I said, Guy Lepoint is a manhunter who convinces the girls to meet with him in the school library, though we don't see him convince them. They're just in the library after that. Like the scene in the principal's office ends. Guy Lepoint is in the principal's office too. The Colleens are in there. The scene ends. The next scene starts in the school library, and he's talking to them at the table. But we don't see how he convinced these two girls to come to the library. And it's only at the end of the scene where you see them unplug their phones that you're like, oh, they went to the library just to charge their phones, and he went along. But I didn't get that at first. This, by the way, becomes a running theme where I keep seeing – scenes that would start with the two girls and Guy Lepoint and wonder why the hell are they all together? or how did they get there? This happens a few times in the movie. Also, we should mention Guy Lapointe is played by Johnny Depp, and he's almost unrecognizable.
Lots of makeup there.
I didn't actually know that.
My notes literally just say Johnny Depp in makeup, Guy Lapointe, because that's actually what it says in the captions.
And then Guy Lapointe.
What Jonathan said. And then it says, in his little title card, says Walrus Lover. I'm like, well, that's all I needed to know.
Yeah.
Because the scene doesn't make any sense, of course, because I haven't seen Tusk.
Right. I believe he asked them about – so remember, Guy left the A to Z, got killed by tiny Nazi thing. And I assume he's there asking them about that. But it got confusing because they were also talking about the Tusk stuff, so I wasn't entirely sure. Great. Okay, so we're done with the library. We're done with Guy. Now – the dad is making them work on the night of the party because he's got to go to Niagara Falls. So, you know, girls can't go to the party. Great. You know, they have to figure out some other plan. This is great. Of course, we want this conflict. Okay, back to yoga. So in earlier on, we had the yoga teacher. Who's the yoga teacher again?
Justin Long. What's his name?
Justin Long. Right.
He's the Apple computer to John Hodgman's IBM.
Yes, right. And his character's name, another punny, Yogi Bear, B-A-Y-E-R, Yogi Bear.
Yeah.
And he's constantly on the phone with some intellectual property lawyers who are accusing him of copyright violations.
So
they do weirdly named poses that are supposed to be jokes. I didn't write any of them down. let's see. Why are they the only two in this class? This seems kind of weird for two 15-year-olds. That's
two 15-year-olds hanging out with an older guy, and they're in yoga clothes and they're bending all over the place. It is very odd. And also, it becomes very obvious if you're watching this scene and you start asking yourself the question, why does this scene exist? It becomes immediately obvious that this is effectively the training montage that will get the girls up to speed for when they have to fight the monsters. They're going to use yoga to fight the monsters.
Yeah. Okay. Back to the store. Some dude walks in, makes a joke. They reply sarcastically, and he says, "That's not very Canadian of you." Yeah. Hilarious. Okay, fucking finally, weird Nazi helmet thing is back. He's stalking towards them. A phone rings. He runs off. So they're, like, behind the counter chatting. We see the little sausage Nazi walking towards him. He cuts off. So, you know, we know that he or it is back in the store. Hunter, cute boy, I think, because I couldn't remember if it was the guy from earlier or not, calls from the party and says it's rocking. But I think we see from Hunter's view at this point, and it's just Hunter and his friend hanging out, right? So there's nobody there.
Yeah, there's no party. It's just the two guys.
Right. So the girls as they would do, say, oh, you should bring the party here. Oh, good. They hatch a plan. There's no one actually party, blah, blah, blah. Hunter appears to have anger issues. Were they planning to kill the girls? So the... I don't remember what exactly Hunter says to his friend, but I think the murdering part may come up in this scene, but I'm not entirely sure.
Hunter tells his friend that this is awesome because they can just go there to the store and kill the two girls there, and there won't be any witnesses or any problems. They won't be able to trace it back to the two guys. So he does reveal in that scene just after he gets off the phone that he and his friend are determined to kill the two girls. We don't know why as of that scene, but we do know that they're planning on doing it.
Yeah. Let's see. Hunter makes up some lie. Gotcha. We're back in the store. Hunter and friend have arrived. Hunter makes up some lie about the party not coming. This is what they call in the States a kickback, which is a term I've never heard. He takes Colleen one for a private tour. She takes him to the back room. I'm betting he dies at some point. I hope they all do. Oh, they're Satanists or something. He says, we're Canadian Satanists. We don't get into the, all that touchy stuff because she's trying to put the moves on him, I believe, at one point. And he kind of just like shuts that down and he's like, no, I just want to kill you for your soul.
Yeah, he says essentially that Canadian Satanists only sacrifice virgins, and the problem is there are no virgins in senior year, so that's why they had to look for girls in earlier classes, yeah, in like the sophomore year, and that's why they chose the two Colleens, that these two girls are going to be their virgin sacrifices to Satan. But they, don't worry, you know, they definitely won't try to have sex with the girls first because
right.
That would ruin them.
Hunter pulls out a knife, says he's going to cut her open. She pulls out a knife, puts it against his balls, and he drops his knife. Good, I'm halfway through. Not sure if that's good or bad. I have to stop pausing to check the time. It's making me depressed at this point. Great. Nazi shows up again. So we're still in this like back room with just Hunter and one of the Colleens.
The dumber of the two colleagues.
Yes. Right. Our sausage Nazi shows up and enters Hunter. He looks like he likes to enter people through the ass, so he popped out his mouth and said something weird when he did. It appears to be a penis. We later learned it's not a penis, it's a sausage. But I was confused at first the first time I saw it.
Yeah.
So basically the thing kills Hunter. Like crawls up through his chest. It's a weird scene, but you don't really care. All right. Hunter's friend. So cut to back in the main part of the store. Hunter's friend is going to kill Colleen too, but the Nazi penis has not crawled up. Oh, but the Nazi penis has now crawled up his ass too. He climbed up through him and we saw it in his chest. Oh, this is when we see the crappy, like the thing crawling up through his chest.
Right. This guy's name, by the way, was Gordon.
Right.
The only reason I know is because I wrote it in my notes just since we already had Hunter. I thought I'd go ahead and mention Gordon.
This is where I realized, it's not a penis. Colleen caught the Nazi and has placed him in the microwave. So the Nazis
they're roughly potato sized.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I wanted to set this up for you, Eric. The Colleens call emergency services, and right. A special cameo star of the universe picks up the phone as a dispatcher, and that person is. Did you not put it in your notes?
I didn't put it in my notes because I thought I'd remember it. Now my brain is gone.
Stan Lee.
Yeah.
Who is in every Marvel film, but Stan Lee is the 911 dispatcher, and he makes a hilarious reference to Doctor Doom.
This is also a moment
where Colleen 2 says, I'm not even supposed to be here today, and I literally threw a pillow at the TV.
That's rough.
My next note. I'm not even supposed to be here today. Yeah, we get it. okay, then we have a fight scene because there's other sausage Nazis. They're in the freezer. We get rid of those. Oh, hey, the cops showed up. Why does everybody call them yoga hosers? So this is the second time, I think, or third, that somebody calls them yoga hosers.
Yeah, and they're just essentially, I think the idea is that these two Colleens, the only thing they seem to care about, they care about two things, their music and yoga. Yeah. And so everyone they're essentially being called losers, and that they're specifically the yoga losers, but yoga hosers in Canadian speech. Also, before we get into the whole cops part, I just want to write this little thing. I wrote this little note that I think is very pertinent. It says, we get a montage of Colleen and Colleen killing sausages in various ways, primarily with hockey sticks, and we get really bad CG as the sausages explode. There are 35 minutes left of this movie, and I hate Eric.
Yeah. My notes get more sparse after this, actually. So,
all right.
I stopped caring as much. The cop showed up. Why does everybody call them yoga hosers? Hey, it's Silent Bob. So it's Jason Mewes, the cop. Yep. The author is back, probably to ask about the Nazis. So we're in the police station now. The author is back, something about a land agreement. Nazi dude bought a bunch of land, and the store is on that land, right? So Jason Mewes, like, books him. He leaves, and the author guy comes in. I don't really know how they work that one out, but
yeah,
he explains to them. Yeah, go ahead.
This is the second part of the film where Guy Lapointe shows up and mysteriously exits one scene and goes into a new scene with the girls, and you don't know how that happened in the middle. So they're both in the police station. They're both in an interrogation room, and Guy Lapointe is allowed to come in because Jason Mewes feels like he owed him a favor, I guess, probably something that carried over from Tusk. And this is also where we got the thing that actually made me kind of chuckle. We get a name for the Nazi sausage monsters, and it's Bratzies, Bratwurst Nazis. That actually made me kind of – I at least grinned a little. But, yeah, so the Colleens agree that they will lead Lapointe into the A to Z store where the Bratzies are. Because they tell him that he'll never be able to get in there by himself, and that Colleen number two – the smarter one happens to know a secret entrance to get into the A to Z. Colleen number one doesn't pick up on the fact that this is a lie. And she's like, why didn't you ever tell me about the secret entrance? Yeah. Ha 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 ha. But here's the thing that's weird. So there's one scene where the two girls are literally handcuffed to a table in an interrogation room. The next scene, they are walking into a section of the A to Z, and you don't see Guy Lapointe bust them out of jail. You don't know how he did it. They never explain it. It just happened. So you go from a scene where the girls are captured by the police to a scene where they're breaking into a building, but you don't know how they got from one point to another, and it drives me nuts.
Yeah, let's see. Yeah, they're back in the store. They change into their yoga clothes or something because they're wearing orange jumpsuits, which seems pretty quick in Canada that they just like arrest you and throw you in an orange jumpsuit. There's no in between. All right. The passageway is in the bathroom. Colleen too says that the passageway was a lie, I think, originally.
Yes.
That there wasn't one.
She says that she made it up so that Lapointe would agree to take them with him.
But it's not, because then there's a secret passage in the bathroom, which is probably supposed to be funny, but it's not. So Guy goes into the bathroom while the girl, he goes into the bathroom while the girls change. Tiny Nazi pops out and sticks a needle into him, which seems odd because it doesn't seem like how they've been attacking normally, but here we are.
Eric, this teaches you the valuable lesson that if you're a lead character, you don't get killed the way you would if you were just a supporting character. And so all three of them are captured by the Bratzies.
Yeah. Now they're all tied up to a table. And I have maybe 200 words, because the next scene is just horrible.
Well, if you want, let me switch over real quick, and then
you can
please
go for it.
add anything, because I wrote a lot of notes in this little section where I said so they meet up with Arcane, the person they learned about in their history class. He has not aged at all, and at first we don't know why, but he explains. He decides that they tell him that his German accent is too strong for them to understand, so he starts to speak in various impressions in order to communicate with him. And the first one he chooses is Al Pacino, which actually is a pretty good Al Pacino impression.
Yeah.
And reveals that the Third Reich had disowned him when he was in Canada. And he also revealed that he created the Bratzies from his own DNA and a mixture of German meat and sauerkraut, and that he put himself into cryogenic storage. But that when the Colleens were practicing their music, they triggered a power outage, and that prematurely woke Arcane back up and stopped the evolution of his Bratzies, which had not fully essentially baked. Like they weren't finished yet, which is why they're teeny tiny instead of human sized. So then Arcane swaps out his Pacino impression for a Stallone impression. Hilarity continues. Then he turns into Schwarzenegger. It says that he learned his impressions by watching, quote, every single thing on Netflix, end quote.
Yep.
Challenged.
His Adam West was pretty good, too.
I haven't gotten to that point yet, but yes. I said, then he swaps it to an impression of Ed Wynn. And I am almost certain most of Kevin Smith's audience have no idea who Ed Wynn was. They'll probably think he's impersonating Alan Tudyk's King Candy from Wreck-It Ralph. If you want to know who Ed Wynn was, watch Mary Poppins. He's the uncle who loves to laugh. Oh, goodness to Betsy. That kind of thing. And that's the sort of impression he's doing. But I'm like, come on, fuck it, Kevin Smith. Your fucking audience has no goddamn clue who Ed Wynn is. What the fuck are you doing? So then Arcane reveals an enormous golem monster form, and he swaps over to Adam West, saying that he can speak like Batman. And the Colleens are like, oh, finally, someone we know. So he does Adam West version of Batman. And then the Colleens start trying to do an impression of the Christian Bale version of Batman by saying, where's the trigger? A billion times, and it's still not funny. Arcane then says he wants to be featured on the Famous People Are Just Like You section of Them magazine, which is kind of like a celebrity mag.
It's like, there's also like a joke that they make three times in this movie about somebody buying bacon in a store in this tabloid magazine.
He's
not
just
funny
like
every
us.
Single time they do it.
Yeah. The whole thing, like, it's supposed to be a jab at celebrity magazines that highlight the most mundane activities of celebrities. That's the joke. Which masturbatory joke for people who are famous. Yay. Then it goes up. He wants the Colleens to take a picture of him standing next to his creation. And then I wrote down the one joke, a super lame joke that I actually enjoyed because it's exactly the same sort of joke that I would tell. It's a terrible joke. I'm saying it outright. The German at one point says, nine, so much nine, it's almost 10. And I thought, that's like a Mel Brooks level of joke. That's like something you would expect in Young Frankenstein. And I loved it.
Yeah.
I genuinely loved that terrible, terrible joke. The girls don't have their phones, so they can't take a picture. So Arcane urges the Bratzies into the form of the flesh golem. So all the little sausage Bratzies get inside this giant monster that's essentially just a big shell. So the Bratzies climb in, and then they're controlling the monster, mostly yelling back and forth to each other. So you hear them inside the monster, but you don't see them. Said, collectively, they control the enormous golem who wields a huge hockey stick. Arcane commands the golem to go out and kill all the art critics in Canada. And I can't help but feel this is Kevin Smith venting his spleen at critics who, in my mind, rightly have criticized his work. Not the first time either. I mean, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back is essentially another movie where Kevin Smith is giving the middle finger to established movie production and the critic worlds. And I'm like, Kevin Smith, if you don't want people to say bad things about you, do good work or just stop caring. But the fact that you keep caring and keep making movies where you're poking fun at the people who are criticizing you doesn't They're make you seem like it. You're better. Yeah, it's just dumb. Yeah. So Lapointe also says killing critics doesn't really count. So it's a real statement being made in this movie. Hardy har har. So in other words, Arcane's like, kill the critics. And they turn to Lapointe. Lapointe's like, well, critics aren't really people. And I'm like, oh, so your whole movie really does have this message of fuck you, movie critics. Arcane commands the golem to ignore the Colleens and kill the critics. But since Arcane gave the golem two thumbs down, the golem kills Arcane in a move that surprises nobody. Like Arcane criticizes the golem. He's told the golem to kill critics, so the golem kills Arcane. What a twist. And this is the point of the film when I realized that I recognize a motif in the movie's score. Yeah, this bugged me. There was a bit in the movie score that kept playing over and over again at this point in the movie, and I recognized it, but I could not place it. It was something I had clearly heard before. So this was like, it wasn't like it was a piece of music that was familiar because I heard it earlier in the movie. It was a piece of music that was familiar because I knew it was from something else, but I could not figure it out at first. And then I started doing some searches on horror movie scores because I was like, I know I've heard this. I know it's from a classic horror movie. And it's a musical motif from the beginning of The Shining. They took a music cue from one of the masterpieces of horror film and used it in Yoga Hosers.
Yep.
And it's just the very beginning. If you watch, by the way, The Shining is available on Netflix. So if you turn it on and you watch just the very beginning, those first few notes, bomb, 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 that little sequence, that's the bit that gets used in Yoga Hosers on more than one occasion. Anyway, the movie is a billion, billion times better than this one. And also it's a movie that has no thematic connection to what's going on in Yoga Hosers. So I don't get why the score steals so blatantly from it. That's where my notes end. So if you have anything from that point to the end of it, essentially it's the girl's
basically, end. Negative critics, they kill him. Oh, they do yoga to kill the thing. Fight scene with old Batman style pals. That's where mine ends.
Because here's the thing is that the movie ends in such a predictable way where the two girls are they're exonerated from the charges of murder. The cops had arrested the two girls because they thought that the two girls were the ones who killed the two boys. They didn't realize it was the sausage monsters. But at this point, killing the big monster, they are magically exonerated for the crimes they had been charged with, and then they end up winning. And that's and then they sing "O Canada" over the closing credits with Johnny Depp as Guy Lapointe playing guitar. They sing it all in English, and then they switch to the French version, and then that's the end.
So all of what you guys have said is way more entertaining. Even Eric's stream of consciousness stuff where it doesn't make a lot of sense because you have to think about it.
Yeah.
Way more interesting than this movie. My last notes are simply this. Hockey mask guy will kill every art critic in Canada. Goalie Golem. Batman 66 fight with sound effects. More yoga. Singing. I brush my teeth. That was the end of it. Because just like, fuck. It just was so long. I mean, this is a long episode of Podcast Without Pretense, but it's shorter than this movie, and it's better. Whose turn is it now? Is it Jonathan's turn?
Yeah.
Maybe pick another Adam Brody movie. Another Adam Brody movie. The trifecta.
I'm looking through horror because that's my go-to. Try to find something that jumps out at me based on just the. Oh, here we go. This is probably a foreign film. Let me check. That always makes Ayaz happy.
Yeah, it does.
Actually, no, I don't think it is. I don't think it is. But it only has one star for me. And the images look terrible. Okay, we're going to watch Ejecta.
Ejecta.
Ejecta. It is a film from 2014. The synopsis is, after four decades of repeated contact with aliens, a paranoid blogger has plenty to write about, and the universe is starting to take notice.
It's 88 minutes.
Yeah, there you go. See, I'm nice to you guys. We're just going to add that to my list. What I should have done was I should have looked at the list my wife made of movies that we should watch, many of which fall more into the bad comedy area, which is why I tend to avoid it, because I think the most miserable experiences we have had so far, if I'm not mistaken, besides Rock and Roll Frankenstein, which I guess still counts.
It was a comedy.
Yeah.
It was a comedy.
Are just the really, really bad comedies.
Although I would say Daddy Can't Dance was pretty good.
It was such a terrible movie.
I know. Because the ending Daddy is... Can't. But the ending's so great. Like, who are these guys? They're important to the plot. They just showed up.
That was definitely one of the movies that had the most what the fuck moments for us. Like, that one was way up there.
We all smile when we think of this movie now because we watch such crap. We're like, oh, yes, that was really shitty, but at least it amused us with its shittiness.
Yep.
Yeah, it was no a talking cat exclamation point or whatever it was.
Speaking of which, I watched a movie about a talking cat. He didn't. Well, he kind of talked. What the hell was it? Nine Lives? It had Christopher Walken and a bunch of people in it.
Well, it should have a bunch of people in it, I'd imagine. If it's just objects, it's going to be not as interesting.
Kevin Spacey, Jennifer Gardner, and yeah. Like, this was a movie.
Was it animated? It was
called Nine Lives. No, it was not animated. I don't recommend watching it, but I came across it the other day, and Liz just kind of looked at me, and I'm like, it's a movie about a talking cat. I have to watch this thing.
That's your beat now. That's all you do. You watch a talking cat movies.
Pretty much.
Like, is the cat talking? I'm watching it. I'm watching it.
Gotta watch that.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry, Jonathan. What were you saying?
No, please. Let's put us out of our misery.
Next time on Podcast Without Pretense.
I can't believe the antagonist in Ejecta was a talking fucking cat.
So my favorite part about Ejecta was that the protagonist was a talking fucking cat.
I searched around. I couldn't find any more. So I think I'm going to write one. It'll have a talking cat, but I'm thinking maybe a talking squirrel too. Live action. Definitely live action.